That Naturopathic Podcast. TNP.
Hello there.
Hi, and thanks for joining us. I'm Dr. Michelle Pulbega, naturopathic doctor.
And I'm Dr. David Miller, ND, and we hear your frustrations. This show is for you.
This show is for you if you're feeling like your current healthcare strategy is not getting to the root cause or the underlying reasons for your health.
This show is for you if you've been told that you're fine, but you definitely don't feel very well.
This show is for you if you're walking out of your doctor's office with 1, 2, 3, 4, or even 5 medications without any mention of diet, lifestyle, or a long-term game plan.
This show is for you if you've got several specialists taking care of you, but no one is really putting all the pieces together.
This show is for you if you believe that health should be part of healthcare. These problems have solutions.
We know it.
Our patients know it.
And we want you to know it.
Naturopathic medicine is the solution that you should know about.
Welcome to another episode of That Naturopathic Podcast.
Dr. David Miller and Dr. Michelle Pulbega, both naturopaths. Thank you.
Thanks for stepping in there. We were not using our best dialects and forms of English right before starting, so we'll just get that out of our system.
This will be a loose cannon of a recording, I guess.
It could be. But you saved us there, so thank you.
Yeah.
You know, that's a good example. We're a dynamic here. We're a dynamic duo. Well, you just saved us as being part of the dynamic duo, and that's actually not a bad intro into what I want to talk about. I was sort of flailing there because Michelle said some funny stuff, and I tried to say something funny that was appropriate, and I could only think of inappropriate things. So she
I said something inappropriate, but.
But you stepped in and helped us out for the,
I rallied.
For the podcast. So I didn't say anything stupider than I did already.
I rallied when it mattered. Come to me for fun things, though, everyone. I'm very funny.
You are funny, but come on, let's stick with the you actually showed that as a duo, the bigger picture is That Naturopathic Podcast. You saved me there. And sometimes part of a dynamic is not so important, and sometimes part of a dynamic is more important. And what I want to talk about today is food sensitivities and how it's a dynamic sort of equilibrium between the actual food and then the receptor of the food, meaning you, but like you could even get a little bit more granular saying your stomach, your neuroimmune system,
right,
etc. So
yeah.
Because a lot of people run food sensitivity testing, right? I think I ran, the last one I ran was about a year ago. So I don't do them very often.
I haven't run one in actually a proper food sensitivity test. I haven't really actually gone out of my way to run one for a couple of years, unless someone has specifically come in and asked me for it. And it's usually at my one clinic. I've often used the bioenergetic testing that I have at my Georgetown office. And the other naturopath and I agreed that part of the general screen we do with the food, with the bioenergetic testing, it doesn't include a full food sensitivity panel. A, it takes a long time, so they end up having to pay more money to sit there for longer. And what we have come to understand is that from previous testing where we did full food panels and other things back in the day, a lot of crap would just light up like a Christmas tree, and it wasn't a true representation of their food sensitivities. Because if you look at everything as a collective with the information we gather, it's okay, their body's under a state of stress, they're not detoxing properly, they have microbes, they have this. And the food sensitivities are usually not the true problem, but rather a reaction. So we have like just reduced our list down to just gluten, different dairy proteins, and lactose. And then if there's something specific the client comes to being like, I've always wondered about eggs, we can ask for that as well. But otherwise, it's like down to those, because those tend to be the most inflammatory. And then beyond that, I'm just kind of like, what is really happening that your body's reacting to a slew of things that it probably shouldn't be? That's my understanding of things now. That's kind of how I approach it.
So I would say, just to sum up, you've got me and you using maybe one food sensitivity test in the last three collective years or whatever. So that tells you something. You can say what you will. Everyone's got their own style, and
it's not that they're invalid though. They're helpful. They're a helpful tool.
Yeah, they can be, but yeah. it's more like you need to have an insight into what's actually going on with the food sensitivity. So it's like
right.
We're not going to go into the biochemical. This is more like a conceptual sort of understanding of right. what's going on rather than a biochemical explanation of the minutia of what's going on neuroimmune wise.
The take home is really like a food sensitivity test can be helpful, but it's still about context. And you have to understand how to interpret that those results too. If I get someone's results and it's just lit up ablaze, that's usually because there's passive leaky gut and their body, for lack of better phrasing, is in a total shitstorm in their gut. So their body's just reacting to everything. So that's not really a accurate representation of true food sensitivities. If I'm seeing things like mushrooms and sugars and yeast and all these other things showing up, then I'm like, oh, maybe there's a yeast issue. Maybe there's a candida problem. And then I start thinking, why is the candida overgrown? What caused that to flourish too high? And then it becomes a deeper, you know what I mean? So it's not just the foods, but we like to look at that. And a lot of people come in and be like, well, I want to know what foods I should and shouldn't be eating. And I'm kind of like, cool. But maybe you also have to ask, is my body able to actually break down these foods, assimilate them, and use them correctly?
That's kind of what I was, hoping we'd get at. Because even if you want to do food sensitivity testing, that's fine. But you know, what's the context behind it? Like you said, so you know, if you haven't had a poo in like 15 days, you're bloated all the time. Right. You have reflux. You know, there's like, you could go on, like you have all these symptoms that those are going to guide my investigations and treatment more than sending you for a $600 food sensitivity test, which will confirm what I already know, which is that you have a disordered equilibrium of health in your digestive tract, at least, if not beyond that. So I don't know if we need to do it. The vast majority of the time, I don't think we need to do it. That's my just personal opinion.
Yeah, I also understand though when people come in, they're like, but my bloating is probably related to a food and my acid reflux gets worse when I eat these foods. Totally. And I get that. And I understand that that's an easier link for people to connect the dots on as patients. And I'm never going to discredit their ability to start to connect the dots, but I always try to get them to think bigger picture and context. And I had someone, I think I even talked about this a few episodes back. I had someone come in, was like, SIBO, 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 SIBO. And I was trying to do low FODMAPs, again, dietary stuff. Like, what foods is my body sensitive to? And I ended up treating her stomach acid and her bloating went away.
Mm-hmm. That's a high yield.
And then it had nothing to do. Well, I mean, it had a little bit to do with dysbiotic microbes. It had a little bit to do with maybe the foods she was eating, and we're still supporting those things, but supporting her stomach proper was a massive game changer for her, where she was so preoccupied by, do I kill more mugs and do I eat low FODMAPs and what are the foods that are causing bloating? And we had to shift gears.
Yeah. I mean, the key here is like, you know, what are you doing on the side of the dynamic interaction between the food and the result of symptoms? So like many people you'll talk to, they don't have a problem with the same foods as you. Is it that food is inherently evil? No, it's probably that their system is just better at using that sort of that fuel without as many negative consequences. And like a simple analogy I use almost every day in clinic is that, you know, everyone knows someone who's very irritable. You know, they don't like this person, they don't like that person. He's a jerk. Like everyone irritates them wherever they go. And it's like, at some point you go, you know what? Like, you're part of the problem here. It is not like, not everyone is horrible. You are part of the problem. And you're part of a dynamic equilibrium between two things, and the result of that can be symptoms and food sensitivities. But if we don't do our best to make sure that we can burn a big enough fire to digest our food properly, then you know you're going to run into problems, because you're going to run around with your improperly functioning gut wondering why every bit of fuel that you put in it irritates you.
Now, to challenge this conversation in our perspective right now, the quality of our food is actually shit. So I'm sure it is an irritant to people, if you know what I mean. So the thing is there's so many moving parts when it comes to digestive health. It is your nervous system. It's your stress response. It's your emotional state. It's your liver and your gallbladder. It's your gut microbiome. It is. But in addition to that, it is the quality of food. We have degraded the quality of food. And there's a lot of arguments that gluten sensitivity has started to increase because of the excessive use of glyphosate and Roundup on things. And there's some really interesting research going into that right now. So we have, and we've hybridized gluten so much that our body doesn't recognize it. Where back in the day, it might have been able to break it down effectively, where now our enzymatic reactions are like, we can only do so much because this doesn't look like what it used to. So to one degree, I also understand that the food system and the food industry is part of the problem, but it's also not the only problem. So I just wanted to put that out there.
And further to that too, there's always outliers. And so you could make the analogy, continue with the analogy. Okay. So there still are like nasty, horrible people. It doesn't mean that there's no such thing as nasty, horrible people. And it's all up to you. It just means there's a sort of variable threshold. And it has, you could also, you know, so we're talking about people and being irritable. You can even just talk about like I have a toddler, right? And he's so easy, like his temperament and everything. And he's so regulated, but we were cooking a couple days ago cause he likes to try and help cook. And I could see I was mixing up the omelet. And he wanted to do it. And he had the little flutter where he almost started to cry. I'm like, okay, he's tired and hungry, or tired or hungry right now. That's it. He's never like that otherwise. So at that point in time, his system was a little more irritable. And that's kind of the same concept, is that you can take, you know, your irritating Uncle John at the family reunion if you've had a good night's sleep and you didn't drink your face off the night before or whatever. So this is the same concept. We're talking about like thresholds of irritation. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Also for me, my, just from personal experience, God, I don't even know how long ago it was now. I don't know, 2015 or something like that. So it's like almost 10 years ago that I really went downhill with my health, and my digestion was just, it was not good, but I had struggled with what we would probably deem classic IBS, with the bloating and the whatever, for a really long time. And then my body hit a true breaking point. But it happened over the closer, like 6 months into this year of absolute hell for me. There were so many stresses. There was 3 deaths, right? There was, you know, acquiring a business, trying to get that, financial strains, a whole bunch of other things happened. Mm-hmm. And it was a wildly remarkable year. And then by the end of it, I was like eating my feelings, as the last person who passed away, which happened to be my father, was really sick with brain cancer. And we were on the road to go visit him, and I was eating garbage food. And then I was eating Italian food in like honor of him, and pizzas and whatever. And it was my unraveling, but it wasn't just the foods. Right. And I had to go through various things to get my gut health back on track. And I did actually run a food sensitivity at one point, because I had done some antimicrobial cleanses and whatever. I went to the doctor. Some of my levels were completely wackadoodle with standard blood work. Like my thyroid was just out to lunch. Like it was crazy. And I ran a food sensitivity test, and I bit the bullet and I put the money in it, and it lit up like a Christmas tree. So for me, I was like, okay, I have a passive leaky gut situation. Things are chronically inflamed. I really scaled it back. I don't have to eat the same way I did back then, but I scaled it back from a digestive standpoint with those foods. Cause I was like, the less irritation I can give to my body, the better capacity it has to heal. And then any other intervention that I did was more amplified, because it wasn't just like 5 cans of gasoline on a fire. You know what I mean? Like I had to start pouring gasoline on the fire for me to put it out. And food sensitivities were a piece of that, or just, you know, high food irritations. And I was very careful, but the big thing was working on my stress. That was the one that had more longstanding results. But that was a year from hell. And it wasn't just the foods. It was like the foods were kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back with my emotional eating after. Yeah, but exactly. Everything was just terrible leading up to that. So, I mean, I share this because I feel like now when I'm under a chronic state of stress, I notice my digestion change. The last 2 weeks have been a personal shit show for me, and my digestion has changed. And I have to be careful. So that means that from a foods perspective, I'm eating a little bit more cleaner. I'm being more mindful, because I don't want to add insult to injury while I'm going through this healing process. Yeah. So foods do play a role. I'm not trying to negate that. But also you have to understand, it's always about the context, guys. And when my body's stressed for whatever reason, my digestion is usually the first thing to show me that I'm not taking care of myself. And that's how I know things, right? And it's not just about the foods. It's about how can I regulate my nervous system? Am I getting enough sleep? Well,
that's you actually delineated further. You said it's not just about the foods. We've sort of established that.
Yeah.
But you also established it's not just about the gut. Right. Yeah. That's key. So what it is, it's an interaction between Michelle and her ingested environment.
Right. If you can't digest the world around you, you're not going to digest the world inside of you. That's that's my mind-body connection there for everybody. Right.
You went there, right?
When life is hard outside and you're having a hard time dealing with it, sometimes that affects your insides.
Mm-hmm.
Shocker. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
But I think, and I will say, I think a lot of the reason that we focus heavily on foods is that we don't know how to focus heavily on, let's say, if we're saying the gut, it's very difficult to focus. Okay, I'm getting like all these algorithms and lines going in my head. Okay, so if we're going to focus on the gut, we seem to be okay at focusing on the gut in general as like a whatever Western person who knows a few things about health. I would say as you get into that, you have to delineate further. Is this a biochemical neuroimmune interaction, or is this a structural compromise, or like there's not enough stomach acid or something like that, where it's like you can delineate a little bit further. But what the other reason that it's difficult is then we can say, okay, it's an interaction between the food and our whole health. Well, you and I know we've been working for a long time to try and treat people's whole health, whole body, whole health means to make whole. So, so that's difficult, imprecise work that requires some sort of, maybe intuition, inspiration, and interaction with other humans at times. So both of those are difficult, right?
Yeah.
So that's more difficult than saying, oh, I did this test and it says I cannot eat corn. I must avoid corn forever. That's so easy.
It feels accessible. It feels tangible for people. And
exactly.
People can wrap their heads around that. But when you say gut health, even when you go to a gastroenterologist, they're like, just take a probiotic or eat low FODMAPs. That is a very overly simplistic perspective about gut health. And most people.
Or health in general.
But the thing is I think for the general public to really understand all the moving parts that is quote unquote under the umbrella gut health is very overwhelming. And we as practitioners still don't know because the science is still not caught up with reality, right? Uh-huh. So it does feel overwhelming. And I think that's too difficult for people to conceptualize. They think gut health, they're like, oh, I took a probiotic, but they forget about the liver. They forget about the gallbladder. They forget about the pancreas. They forget about stomach acid. They forget about chewing, for God's sakes. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then you take it, like you said, to neurological, emotional. And I think the other thing too, is when people are under a state of stress, it's hard for them to think that they might have any kind of control over that stress. And there are some things in our external environment that we might not be able to control or manage. So being able to focus on food, which is something you can control, seems a lot more tangible.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So there's no shame. I guess what we're saying is no shame in doing it. It's just,
no,
we can do better.
It's human nature.
it's hard to do the other side of the, you know,
yeah, it's hard to look at yourself and be like, am I the problem when it comes to my stressors? Because that's what I had to do.
And But even if you limit, is my gut and digestive system the problem? Then now you've done visceral manipulation one. Now you know how much you didn't know. Okay, so structure is that important. Like it is. It is so bloody important. And then it's so hard to do really well. Like I struggle with it every day. I get great successes, but I struggle with it every day because it's, you know, it's difficult work.
Mm-hmm.
It really is, but it's hugely important. So, I think that's why we focus a lot on like no slamming food sensitivity. Just saying it doesn't work for me as a way of understanding the dynamic between the person and the food.
Yeah.
As a $600 investment, I feel like I'd rather this person talks to you about the way that things are in their life and the basics that they can do first and all that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Before.
Yeah. And I feel like sometimes when it comes to the digestive stuff, and if we want to focus on foods, sometimes it's also just about being logical. Like maybe drink less alcohol, eat less sugar, eat less processed foods, start eating more whole foods. If you're having a hard time with raw vegetables, eat more cooked vegetables for now. You know what I mean? And for the most part, gluten and dairy have been completely bastardized in society. So sometimes people need a break from one or both, one or the other or both, right?
Yeah.
Those would be my first steps. Are you hydrated enough? Are you sleeping? And then are you snacking all the time? Because that's a big one too. It's not that you have a food sensitivity. It's that you're just eating constantly. So your digestion never gets a break to reset. So there's a lot of different things that might be part of it. Foods do play a part, but they're just not the only piece of the puzzle. But I understand why human nature is to tack on to what feels tangible and accessible to them. So that's totally cool.
Totally get it. Yeah. I guess I run into a sustainability issue if I troubleshoot it too. Another reason I find is that you run into a sustainability issue, you know, like depending on where you live and all that. Like, I'm not going to tell someone in Iquala to be a vegan. I wouldn't think that's a smart thing to do. You are more likely to succeed as a vegan near, you know, more in warmer climates,
warmer tropical like climates. Yeah.
Yeah.
An abundance of fresh fruit where it's enzymatically active. And like,
and then there's that too. And then like, so then if you're running around avoiding, oh, so I got my food sensitivities, I got 18, 25 items on there. I'm not supposed to eat. And then you run around trying to avoid that. It becomes difficult to do that depending on where you live. Like, it gets overwhelming. That's what I'm getting to, is it's going to get overwhelming. And it's going to get to the point where you might just throw your hands up and have a case of the, you know, I can't bother doing this. I just can't do it. And then you revert back to like some easier standard because it's hard to do that.
I think that's also the responsibility of like the practitioner. Like if someone comes in and wants to run a food sensitivity panel, I'm not necessarily going to say absolutely not. I'll be like, hey, if you're curious about your health, we can run that. Here's how much it costs. And if you want that as a worthy investment to your health, let's go for it. Right. Like I'm not opposed to doing it, but it's also a matter of educating the patient. Like, let's just say 25 things do come up. I'll tell them their true food sensitivities might be like one, two, or three of those things.
Yeah.
Maybe even four or five for a longer period of time. But if we're doing our work correctly, and as we avoid those foods, we do all the other things that need to be lined up, we will probably be able to reintroduce 75% of those foods back in. Some of them might take a little longer before we can reintroduce them. And then we see how your body reacts. And some of these things might not be that big of a deal long-term. Might actually just be one thing. And then some of those, like two or three things, you just have to like, not overdo it. One thing you have to avoid, the other things might be moderate, and everything else is fine again. I think it's about educating patients that food sensitivities aren't like that one test does not mean a life sentence. And it's a matter of being strategic about how you use that information. And then eventually we're going to try to reintegrate most of those foods back in. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's, I think, the part of the practitioner that's really important, to make sure that the patient is aware that this isn't just like, okay, here you go. Good luck with that.
Yep.
Like,
good luck just avoiding 27 foods that are common forever.
Yeah.
You know, I compare food sensitivities, or maybe labs in general, or like picture day. Mm-hmm. You know, if you know it's picture day, and you go and you drank your face off and you didn't get any sleep and you got your mustard stained shirt on and you didn't comb your hair and all that, and are you surprised that your pictures don't look very good? Like, so if you're in a, that goes back to the original thing I was saying, like if you have all these signs and symptoms of you know, problematic guts, maybe you can address them first, clean up before picture day, I guess is the way I'm getting at.
Yeah, I agree.
Makes sense?
Yeah.
I hope so. I've told a lot of patients that, so I hope so.
Oh my goodness. All right. Well, here's the thing, guys. Food sensitivity testing isn't necessarily a wash, but it's also not the end all be all. You still have to put things in context. Like everything Dr. Dave and I talk about, a test still needs to be put in context, test results, regardless of what that test result says. But yeah. Ta-da.
Thanks for reeling me in today, Michelle.
My pleasure. And now that we stop recording, I'm going to say more inappropriate things.
Okay, bye. We're going to start talking about other things. Bye. Have a good week, everyone.
Bye, everyone.